Good morning. It's time for the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
Well, welcome and good morning. I'm Harry Miller.
Good morning. I'm Dave Kabikian.
And David and I are two of the attorneys with the Estate Planning Group at the Herzog Law Firm. Conveniently located in Albany, New York at Corporate Woods, Saratoga Springs, Clifton Park, New York, and Kingston, New York. And we are here each Saturday morning here at the studio to...
I was going to say, it sounds like you guys are like right in the studio.
It does. We are. Well, I'm just... Hey, I just got back. I said we stayed out until April. I've been in North Carolina the last 2.5 months. Finally drove back. I got up this morning. It's like 30 degrees and it's windy. And I think I should have stayed there another couple of weeks. What do you think, Dave?
Well, I don't know about that. I'm glad you're up. But I woke up and I said, this is going to be a great day. It's already 30 degrees.
I can't remember. I don't think it was 30, at least for the last 3 weeks where I was. Okay. Even the overnight low was not 30.
Well, it's looking good for the next 5-6 months, I think.
It is.
I like that.
Yeah.
Lots of an extended forecast.
So I was talking to someone about the weather, and I said I always look at the lows. I don't look at the highs for the day. I look at the lows.
Okay.
And once the lows are above 32, I feel good because there's no crazy storms,
right.
No snow that's going to come, because as long as it's always. And she said, that's so weird. You look at the lows. And I said, well, I am a Mets fan, so.
Wow.
This is like
trains you.
Is this like a glass half empty guy? Because you're not a glass half empty person. You know, you are a problem solver. You are always looking on the bright side of things.
What are you looking for, an extra bonus? What are you doing over there?
You're absolutely there, but so you could be an optimist, but also it's never all that bad. And so.
It depends.
Yeah, when my worst case isn't as bad.
Okay.
And that's a good segue, I guess.
Absolutely.
Some estate planning, because we've had a couple Medicaids, Harry. Well, first of all, I should just say, you've been lying to everyone for almost 2 years here, because you've been saying we're in the studio, and we're never in the studio.
But we are today.
We are today.
Yes.
So if we sound good, it's because we're in the studio.
Yes.
This is great. Cell phones, nothing.
Right. Definitely. We are here. And you can be our first caller this morning here at the Herzog Law Firm's Estate Medicaid Planning Hour by pouring yourself another cup of coffee and picking up the phone and dialing David and I here at 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. And we would love to chat with you this morning and answer any questions on your mind about the estate planning process, wills, trusts, powers of attorney, healthcare proxy, asset protection planning, estate administration, all the good things we've been talking about on the radio here for a long, long time. I'm going back to, we started doing this show probably around 1980.
1980.
Yeah, when Shalom Kapovitz, the founder of the estate plan, well, Herzog was the founder of the estate plan, he was the founder of the firm. Kapovitz, when Herzog retired, really built up the estate practice in the late 70s and through the 1980s, and we've been doing radio for over 40 years. Yeah,
I was born in 1980.
Wow.
Well, maybe your parents listened to it. No, they were in Long Island. I don't think the show went down that far. And we didn't have. I don't think there were internet and cell phones.
Well, I didn't realize it was that long of a. program we've had.
It wasn't always. It started out. It started out with a general questions about anything. Shalom had a show called Ask the Judge. Okay, he at one time had been a police court judge in Cahoes for 4 or 5 years, if you can believe that.
He really milked that, huh? Called himself the judge.
And loved his favorite judge compliment. And then as time went on, and we really focused the focus of the firm went into the state planning, estate administration, and Medicaid planning. We limited the questions to those sorts of areas. But yeah, it's been around a long time, definitely.
So, Harry, I mentioned before that I look at the lows and I like to improve the worst case scenario, and it fits, because when we do a trust and people are planning for long term care, we do a Medicaid trust. the idea is not that you're going to need a nursing home, but you might. The idea isn't we're planning for a nursing home, but again, you might need one. The idea is we want to give money to the right people. We want to avoid probate. And then when it comes to long-term care needs, we do want to protect assets. We want to get through the 5 years, but sometimes we don't get through the 5 years.
Right.
But every month tends to count. And the more money you have, the more money being protected in your trust, the more important each and every month is. Because last week, Jane Marie and I talked about a fact pattern where there's about $800,000 unprotected. We're doing a loan and gift plan. If everything works out perfect, there's a penalty period, Harry, of 32 months, right?
Right, well, that's only about 2.5 years instead of 5 years.
That's right. Now, if that person had done a trust and had done a trust 4 years ago, let's say, you would say to that client or to their daughter, okay, here, just private pay one more year.
One more year. 12
and that's
months.
Better, and that's better than 32 months.
Yes.
And so at some point along the way for that fact pattern, they would have basically gotten to the break-even point where now every month they're effectively saving money because they have not yet needed a nursing home. And when you do a trust, yeah, it you get money to the right people and avoid probate. Those are very important things. That's a whole point of estate planning.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea that we could limit the damage, because sometimes people say, well, geez, 5 years, Harry, that's a long time.
I have clients all the time say, oh, I'll never get through the 5 years. I will never, you know, a couple comes in. And I say, I got a healthy, reasonably healthy couple in their early 80s who say, oh, 5 years. No, not 5 years. We're too old for five. I say, you know what? I'm not a doctor and I'm not, I don't tell fortunes. But I can almost guarantee the two of you are 82 years old. You're in really good health for your age. I can almost guarantee that at least one of you is going to live into your 90s. Okay, because you probably will, given the longevity and the health care that's available today. And when you talk to people about it, well, you know, my mother lived to be 97.
Yeah.
And well, so you've got a genetic component in addition to the fact that you've taken good care of yourselves over the years.
And all the medical developments, right?
Exactly. Exactly. So when you talk to people, when you talk to clients like that, it sort of rings a bell. Saying, well, oh, maybe this isn't as crazy an idea as I thought it was when I originally came in here.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely. And, you know, the way that it works out is that if we could just avoid probate, that process, we end up saving several thousand dollars.
Thousands of dollars. You know,
$3,000-$4,000 on average, I'd say. So if we're able to avoid probate, the trust kind of paid for itself. I mean, I don't want to sell a trust to people on the radio, but the idea is, again, worst case scenario, which is kind of best case scenario, Harry, I have a wonderful life. I never need a nursing home.
Mm-hmm.
One day I die. I avoided probate. That trust was worth it. And if I happen to have long-term care needs, unfortunately, well, then it was really worth it because that's the whole point of that trust.
That's right. That's right. I mean, really, the cost of a trust will, in almost every single case, be less than a probate proceeding, even if you only have like a house and a little bit of money in an individual name, the probate process, the filing fees, depending on the value of the assets, and the legal, it's going to take 6 to 12 months to settle the simplest estate. Normally, in a probate proceeding, we would not ordinarily make full distribution of the estate until 7 months from the appointment of the executor, because the main reason is that when a will is filed for probate, any creditor of the deceased person can file a claim against the estate for up to 7 months. I say, oh, well, my dad didn't have any debts or anything like that. He didn't owe any money. I said, no, but didn't you tell me he had an automobile accident about 8 months before he died and somebody got injured? Yeah. So what if that person sues the estate? And he doesn't have enough insurance. That's a claim against the estate. Oh, I didn't know that. I said, well, that's why he came to us, so to find these things out. And so these are the things. Now, if your money's in a trust, guess what? You don't necessarily have to wait. And the trust assets cannot necessarily be invaded in every instance to pay the claims of the deceased person.
Harry, we have a client, unfortunately, she passed away so we've been talking to her daughter, and so mom had a trust, house is in the trust.
Mm-hmm.
Some money had daughter on it in the bank, right? She was like
joint, you know,
essentially joint. So immediately after the death, I mean, as soon as they were ready emotionally and all that stuff, they put the house on the market, sold immediately. We already closed on it. We're holding the money. We can give out the money to the three children.
Right.
Daughter calls, says, I just found a bank account in mom's name.
Uh-huh.
I said, okay, how much? Thankfully, it's about $35,000.
Okay.
Okay, so under the small estate limits in New York. So it's a little truncated of a procedure. But that money, even though it's just sitting there in a bank account, right? How easy would it be to just tell the bank, can you just give us three checks, right?
All right.
We all get along. That's what's going to happen. Now, we have to go through this whole process of, you know, in this case, it'll be a small estate. If it was 15 grand more, we are doing what's called a full probate.
A full probate proceeding.
You know, it's a mess. And the worst part about probate, and we can't really complain as attorneys about it. I mean, we're being retained to do a probate, right? How could we possibly be anti-probate? We hate it.
Mm-hmm.
It's awful. And the client has to pay for me to go to surrogate's court and sit there for an hour, wait through the whole roll call because this estate's last name starts with a W, right? So I'm hearing and then I go up there and no one else, you know, the judge calls the case and we look around to see if your sibling is there. The one who never responded to the waiver and consent.
Anyone file objections? Because you had to notify everybody who would have inherited the person's estate had they died without a will. And here, in case we have the daughter, but there could be other children, for instance.
Or
may
someone,
or may not be, what?
Yeah, I'm sorry, Harry. Actually, so we got to interrupt each other again. This is great. It's like we're on the phone. How wonderful.
It's easier when you can see the person who you're talking to.
It does help.
Absolutely.
Radio goes, it's better.
Yeah. Well, so, Harry, I was going to say, sometimes people are just lazy and they don't return a legal notice called a waiver and consent. So we send all those interested parties that you're mentioning, these distributees, a document called a waiver and consent. They could waive their right to contest the probate. They can consent to Harry being the executor, whoever is the named executor in the will.
Right.
And all they got to do is sign it and send it back, and we can avoid a court appearance. And if they don't send it back, we have to
issue
a citation.
Another piece of paper from the court called a citation. You know, it says, you know, it's like at the wedding. Speak now or forever hold your peace. Okay? So if you got a problem with, you know, with Aunt Emily's will, either show up or send your lawyer on this day. Otherwise, forget it. All bets are off.
Right. And so if we can't track down that person, I mentioned the fact pattern with you a couple weeks ago where there's a child who's got a drug addiction. So tracking her down is going to be very difficult because it's not just a small drug addiction. It is a very big
drug addiction.
A major,
I remember, yes.
So we got to hunt them down. We got to find out where they are. We got to personally serve them. If we're not going to personally serve them, we have to ask the court pretty please, can we mail it or can we do something else?
Yes.
If we don't know their residence, we have to post a legal notice in the back of a newspaper.
I could tell you horror stories about that. 15 years ago, I had a client. When it was a client in our Kingston office who died and left all of her money to her best friend. The woman had been she had no spouse, no children, and a will that this will predated. We didn't do the will. The will predated the simultaneous witness affidavit, which I think was 1965 or 1968. Okay, so we had to find all of her distributees, which would have been her parents, which had siblings, sisters and brothers who were dead, a bunch of nieces and nephews. We had to hire a genealogical search firm, okay? That cost about... Back then, it cost about $8,500 off the top. And they're very good. They find these people. The one that was a difficult one was one nephew had last been seen traveling with a carnival outside of Atlanta. He was a carny, you know, like the guy that puts up the Ferris wheel and stuff. You know, did you ever see that movie, Place Beyond the Pines, with Ryan Gosling? It was in Schenectady. It's the Indian name for Schenectady. He was a carny. You know, his motorcycle guy, this guy. Well, so they found him. Guess where he was? He was locked up in a jail on a drug charge somewhere in Texas.
Okay.
Now, you know there are special rules governing the service of process, including a citation, on a person who is incarcerated.
Harry, do you know that I went to a correctional facility about 4 years ago
okay.
to meet with a
client. As a visitor, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's just say he was a allegedly a violent offender.
Okay.
It was an interesting experience.
He's in a big house.
Yeah.
Maximum security.
Yeah.
Greenhaven or Dannemora. I've been to Dannemora a long time ago. Yeah.
Well, when did you get out?
We were assigned counsel. Years ago, I was a young, like a baby lawyer. We were assigned counsel in a murder appeal in a case in Rensselaer County. It would have been 1975, I would say, yeah.
Well, so Harry, people are out there saying, well, this is all great, but my family's quite small, and we don't need to look at nephews, and no one's in jail, thankfully. So even when it's easy, we say this all the time, even when probate is easy, it is a pain in the... You know?
Neck.
Yeah, pain in the neck. It's a big pain in the neck. It's costly. It's time-consuming. It can hold up a real estate deal. So I mentioned in this fact pattern, that home sold, boom, like that. Because she could list it, snap of a finger, like
right.
that. Because she was the trustee. We didn't need a court to say, yes, you're officially executor. You're recognized by New York to be the executor. She's already the trustee, boom. And as we briefly talked about with the you know, Medicaid crisis planning... Every month counts. Time is money. When it comes to probate, time is money as well. So there's a literal cost, and then there's this whole time is money cost.
Oh, it's ridiculous. Do you remember a couple of weeks ago, a month ago, you and I talked. I have a client who I'm handling an estate of his father who died. Mother's in a nursing home. This is a client with a house in Brooklyn. They filed the father died without a will. They're doing an administration proceeding.
Mm-hmm.
They filed the paperwork with a court in Kings County last September, and they still don't have letters of administration. Now, this house is sitting there. You and I both read the newspapers. You know what's happening. The Fed is bumping up interest rates, okay? That's going to depress selling prices of homes. Mortgage rates are going to be higher, which means you can buy less house for the same amount of money. And so there is an economic. Now, here's the solution to the problem. We could go back and try to get preliminary letters, all right? We could get preliminary letters. I'm not sure in Kings County. We're not handling there's a lawyer in New York who's handling that. It might take just as long to get preliminary letters as it does to get permanent letters.
It's a mess. It is a mess.
The five counties in New York are very hard. If you're anywhere in those areas, avoid the hassle and talk about some kind of a trust. Protect your assets, streamline the probate process, and protect yourself against the staggering cost of long-term care.
You could be our first caller by calling 518-476-5900. If you want to talk about something a little more private, perhaps, you can call our office at 465-7581. I wrote it down, Ben. It's right there. You could see
that. No one had to correct you this morning, which is great.
Harry, I got our office line wrong 2 weeks ago. Some poor person got, perhaps got some consultation phone calls. So now I write it down.
It happens.
I mix up the radio station, 476. It's 465. It's close enough.
Yeah, 476.
Yeah.
All right.
So I had a couple more Medicaid fact patterns, Harry. It kind of hits the greatest hits here, and I don't want to get you upset on a beautiful 35
My first
degree.
Day back.
Yeah, really.
But this one might get you upset. It got me upset.
Okay.
So wife comes in, says, I don't know what I'm going to do. My husband has been in a nursing home. And she starts crying because he's in a nursing home. And I said, I'm so sorry. You know, when did he go in? She said, last September. And that's when I said, oh, no. Okay. So she's wife.
So
her husband went in seven, 8 months ago. And I said, is he on Medicaid right now? No. So have you been paying? Do you have long-term care insurance? No. So have you been paying? And she said, we've been paying out of pocket.
Private pay.
I'm not going to have any more money left. I, wife, will have no more money left for the rest of my life.
Right.
And I said, so first of all, so this happened on Tuesday, Harry. So it was the 29th. So I said, your husband will be qualified for Medicaid as of April 1st, if not already. Okay, so don't worry about that.
Right.
We got you. She said, oh, good. And I said, but I might make you upset with what I'm about to say. And she says, what, why? And I said, well, I could have done this in September. And she said, what? And I said, I don't know who you talked to, the facility.
I talked to nobody. Plus, or
it was actually a facility plus her attorney who had done her basic will, power of attorney, healthcare proxy, but didn't know. All he said was, you're going to have to spend down your money. You have too much money. So Harry's visibly upset, everybody. Are you okay?
I'm not a lawyer, and I'm upset.
It's really messed up. It truly is, because the easiest exemption in our world when it comes to crisis planning and getting lucky in the fact pattern is having a spouse. A spouse is the most important fact in any fact pattern, because it gives us this option, Harry, of spousal refusal, just move money over.
You can save a lot. You can save more money if you have a spouse than you can if you're single or widowed. It's just, that's the way the rules are written. And as David's talking about it, what's called a spousal refusal. And in some, it is not, I never view it as a Medicaid planning technique. It is
lucky.
A crisis planning technique for people who have not done advanced Medicaid planning.
Yeah.
But it's there, and it still is there, and it still works. And we can transfer assets to a healthy spouse in the community and immediately apply for Medicaid, even if we're over the resource level. If she's under the resource, I don't know whether she's over or under. Or
well, they would have been combined over. So a single individual, everyone out there, about $16,800 of resources. If you're a married couple, you combine all the allowances, close to $91,000 or so. A house could be exempt if your wife is still living in the house.
Roughly about a house and about $100,000.
Yeah.
And you're good to go.
Right.
So over that requires some spend down or some planning or some transfers.
Right. So in her fact pattern in September, well, they did combined have more than they're allowed. But very simply, we would have moved that little bit of extra to her column.
Right.
And he would qualify. Mm-hmm. And we would do a spousal refusal, but it would be a relatively small one because it wasn't a large amount of money. The part that really stinks is that now she's going to, you know, have to spend some money get qualified for Medicaid, and there's a whole look-back period. We're hoping there's no gifting that's happened in the last 5 years. If there have, Medicaid won't care about the fact we've been private paying the last 7 months. We don't get credit for that, guys.
So that's about $90,000, right? 15, 16, so she spent $75,000 to $90,000 over 5 or 6 months, so she's about $15,000 a month?
I think it's been over 100, right?
So she's got like 105. I'm not good at much. I'm good at math, though, especially when it's money.
Tragically, this person has spent close to $100,000 unnecessarily based on no advice or bad advice.
A little bit of both, I think, on this one.
Yeah.
And it's too bad. It's really too bad. We had to hug it out at the end. She was so thankful for hearing that her husband's going to qualify, and she was kind of also, like, well, I'm going to try not to think about the last 7 months, because in addition to the emotional piece of having your spouse mm-hmm. in a nursing home and all that must go into that kind of decision, you know, she's got to deal with the fact that it didn't have to be like this, and there could have been more money for the rest of her life.
Right.
And she's relatively young, so, you know, best of luck to her. But it's a reminder to everybody that you do need to meet with Harry if it's something about estate planning and elder law. And while there are many attorneys, look, we could do your traffic ticket. Harry can do, I bet Harry, you could do a closing just fine if you needed to.
I could probably still
get you through a divorce. Do not come to me for a family law fact pattern, right? That's not what we do, right? We do something, and I think we do it well, but there's other things we do not do well, and we don't do them. So you got to go to someone that does whatever you need really well. You know, when you go get a haircut today, Harry's
no doubt, he's backed up. I may not, maybe the middle of next week before I can.
3 inches long.
Besides, I have a huge amount of appointments coming up starting.
Well, so.
This is the thing. People get into this mindset, and the people at facilities don't necessarily, their job is not to give you advice, but sometimes I won't even go there. Because it wouldn't be nice.
They have a business to run, Harry.
They have a business to run. But the mindset that people go into when they have a relative or in a nursing home is, oh, my God, there's nothing I can do. My husband is already in the nursing home. There's nothing I can do. I got to spend my money, basically impoverish myself. That is not correct. There are many things you can do, and you need to consult with the proper people who can give you that kind of advice. And these are lawyers who specialize in the kind of Medicaid plan that we do. Many lawyers are very excellent estate practitioners. They are excellent at drafting trusts and wills and documents and things like that. They don't necessarily know anything about the Medicaid process. We get referrals all the time from other law firms here in Clifton Park, in Saratoga, in Kingston. We get referrals from other firms saying, look, I don't go. These people, they understand the system. They understand the rules. I am not qualified to. And what lawyers, any more than somebody came to me to do a bankruptcy proceeding, I don't do creditors' rights or debtors. You know, I'm not a bankruptcy attorney, and I wouldn't undertake to do that.
It's not just the attorneys. You know, to have a team of paralegals that do nothing but Medicaid applications and used to receive them for the Department of Social Services.
They were all processing. They were all senior Medicaid examiners for various county social services departments. So, as I say, they've done both ends of the. They've done both ends. So not only are they preparing and filing it, they know what's going to be reviewed, and they know what needs to be in the application in order to get it stamped approved. You know.
Yeah, and Harry, you know, maybe people just don't. You know, we always say with medicine, it's so obvious you're going to go to, you know, your dentist instead of the you know, podiatrist, you know, for your
correct
mouth needs. When it comes to law, it's so easy to do a couple different things and dabble and jack of all trades, you know, master of none. That, and people will say, well, I need to get a will. That's what I'm told I gotta do. I gotta get a will. Well, That's like a generic term. People are saying you gotta figure out your estate. That's what they mean when they say you gotta go get a will. A lot of times your will alone is actually the wrong move, and we'll talk about more of it at the second half of the Estate Planning Hour.
We can take our break right here. We're about 30 seconds short, but that's all right. We can do it. It's different. I'm not jumping in to try and figure out when you stop talking.
I didn't know if I should start or you're going to start.
No, you're good. I'll do
so
it.
So awkward.
We'll be right back with the second half of the Herzog Law Firm's Estate Medicaid Planning Hour coming up right after this.
You've been listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. Join us every week to learn more about protecting the assets you've worked hard for, options available for Medicaid planning, and more. With offices located in Corporate Woods in Albany, West Harrison Street in Saratoga Springs, Executive Woods in Clifton Park, and 130 North Front Street in Kingston, our attorneys are here to help you. If you'd like to schedule an appointment to speak with David, Jane Marie, or Harry, please call us during normal business hours Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. To contact us at our Albany office, call 518-465-7581. Our Saratoga Springs office, 518-581-8131. Our Clifton Park office at 518-952-4010. And our Kingston office at 845-338-6405. Let the Herzog Law Firm help navigate a plan that works for you and your family. Now back to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
And welcome back to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour. I'm Harry Miller.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Dave Kubikin.
And Dave and I have been chatting here the last half hour with apparently none of you.
A call list. It was a call list half hour.
A call list half hour. Oh.
Unbelievable. We're now here. We're in the studio.
Is everybody just bundled up because it's 30 degrees?
Even Jay Marie gets calls in the first half hour.
It, you know, normally Ben will have to find a little spot to say, hey, guys,
jump in.
A caller.
Yep.
Here we could see the board. No, nothing.
I know. It was redesigned today. I love this new screen here. It was really.
You like that? Yes. It was a COVID protector back when. So that's what it was up
like
for.
It's like the Colgate shield. Remember when you were...
You start shaking Colgate if you get upset.
Kept cavities from attacking your teeth. David wouldn't remember that. He was born in 1980.
I
graduated high school in 1980.
No, you didn't.
Yeah, I did. 1980.
Wow. I graduated from high school in 1966.
All right. All right, Harry.
Wow.
I brought you some vinyl back.
Did you really? Thank you.
Yeah, I'll bring it in.
I can't wait.
Uh-huh.
Well, so you could be a caller, 518-476-5900. Otherwise, we're going to just keep talking about vinyl records for the next half hour. That's fine with me.
Uh-huh.
Bunch of 45s?
Oh, no, these are LPs.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. A couple of good ones. Good Rolling Stones. Some I had duplicates of. Beatles, you know? Records are 50 years old, some of them.
Everyone should see my face. I'm very excited.
Oh, yeah.
Original ones. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Anyway, I'll bring them. You can pick and choose. You can have them all, or, you know, it was fun. Sort of a variety of things. Anyway, so we were, before the half hour, talking about various ways of protecting assets and this unfortunate case of the person who spent down too much money. That was unnecessary to do.
All of it, Harry.
All of it. Actually,
Ben asked during the break, he said, so you guys would have saved half the money. I said, no, we would have saved $105,000. We would have saved all of it. He would have qualified in September because of the spousal refusal. And they were not that much above it to begin with. They could have thrown some money at some debt on the house. They could have easily qualified if they had come to talk to us. And, you know, how do you...
And the problem is, even it's even compounded in a way, because if they had come sooner, here's the deal. You can apply for Medicaid benefits up to 3 months in arrears, okay? But the transfers hadn't been made until she came to see David last week. So 3 months ago, they were over-resourced, and if we applied now, that would be denied. So you have to come, when you have a problem, you have to ask for help. It's as simple as that. And when we come in to a person, when a person comes in like this client, and they sit down and talk to David for an hour and a half, or whoever, David, Jane Marie, myself, we are all equally qualified to discuss these matters. None of us is smarter than the other. David's really smiling.
No,
it depends.
Well, the reason why I'm smiling.
Some of us have been around longer.
We're all good at different decades of trivia. Let's put it that way.
And you know, the other thing is, we're really nice people. We're really nice people to get along with. We are easygoing. I mean, we are talking about really difficult, complicated things here for people. We are talking about it's either the emotional trauma of putting your husband or your wife in a nursing home is that decision in and of itself is probably years in the making. To decide that, this woman probably, I've seen this time and again, so has David, tear themselves inside out, taking care of a husband, lifting, turning, doing everything that a 24-hour home health care aide would be doing without obviously being paid, to the point where they can't do it anymore or they've injured themselves. And now to deal with the economic chaos of all this money stuff that most people, frankly, just don't understand to begin with, you need to ask for help, and we're here to do that. You come in for an appointment like this person did. You even if you just leave and say thank you very much, I'm not going to use your services. We're not going to send you a bill for that initial consultation. It's free, right?
Yeah.
So she doesn't get a bill for $300 for an hour consultation with David.
We do charge for parking, though. No, I'm kidding. It's all free, and it's incredibly important. And one of the lessons from the first half hour about, you know, time being money. So you mentioned, you don't just qualify if the transfers haven't been made, right? This retroactivity goes back 90 days. You could actually be approved in an application filed in June. You could be approved for April.
Correct.
Okay. At the end of the month, every month, it's a very, very busy time because when clients happen to come in, I'm looking at one right now. I write down my little notes for my appointments now so I could have them at the ready. March 21st,
ten days ago.
Yeah, met with two sisters. They were there about their mother, and she's in about to go from rehab to now being a resident. I said, listen, we have a lot of work to do before the 31st. However, I will have her qualified on April 1st. And then you have a house to sell, and then we'll do this loan and gift plan. So I'm not going to open up the whole thing here. But the idea is if we could make it so if there's a snapshot taken of mom's assets on the first day of a month, we can get them qualified for that month.
Exactly.
If their snapshot is above what they're allowed to have, say goodbye to April, essentially.
Right. That's another 30 days at, what, $500 a day?
So roughly. Time is money, because sometimes we need to move heaven and earth to get someone qualified for that next day. Now, it doesn't always work out that way, but it can if we have a spouse, we have a disabled child. You know, if the facts work, they work. When it comes to home care, absolutely we can get you qualified for the next month financially, because there's no look-back period currently. On the books currently is this idea that on July 1st there will be a 30-month look-back period. We'll see.
Well, right now that's what the rules are.
We'll see.
Now, they have been extended in the past, but there's certainly no guarantee they're going to be extended beyond this July. We'll know that probably sometime in June.
I predict, Harry, either it's never going to happen or it'll happen on October 1st, which would be a full 2 years, or maybe...
Following the original implementation.
Yeah, or maybe 2.5 years, whenever it gets to 2.5 years in 2023, just so that it matches up and they say, okay, we never implemented it, but everyone was aware of it, and now it's instituted.
So they'll just extend it through the phase-in period, and then it'll just be automatic.
One or the other, and I think...
Or they'll abandon it.
I think maybe that, too, because it's just such
possible.
It's a short-sighted strategy. They want to save money on home care, and more people will need a nursing home because less people get home care.
Well, and the home care is, you know... The application for home care is critically important if you're in a situation where you need it. But as across the country, the home care aides and nursing home workers are in short supply. It's not a problem just in this area. It's a problem throughout the nation. Finding people who can do these services, it's starting to come back a little bit, I think. We're almost at, I was listening to that driving back from... yesterday from North Carolina, the employment rates are pretty close to pre-pandemic levels, and unemployment is at or below pre-pandemic levels, but some of those jobs are still experiencing shortages, probably because there are more people now than 2.5 years ago who need home care. This article I have here, the article basically is, the title of it is Getting Old, Growing Old is Something Most Americans Can't Afford Anymore. And with a number of people turning 65, there's something like 50 million people today in this nation over 65. By 2040, this could be 80 million in 18 short years, and something like 15 million of them are over 85.
You know, it's and now
I mean,
when
seriously.
I meet with people and I say, "How old are you?" And they say their age, and I'm like, "I don't believe you. You don't look like you're 78 years old. How is this possible?" Right? They look like they're 50 or they're 90, and they look like my parents. My parents are not 90, you know. And it's just you're living longer, but your bones may not look so good. Right? It might be tough to get around from one point of the room to the other. Your brain may not be so good, but you may look good, right? So aging and being around longer means that long-term care is going to be something we're all going to be dealing with, every single one of us, because thankfully we're going to live long enough for long-term care to be an issue.
Well, and it says here, and this is an article actually out of the New York Times, about 70% of Americans 70% of Americans 65 or older today are expected to need extended services and supports at some point. That could be home care, assisted living, or nursing home. That's a big percentage. That's like most everybody.
Well, yeah, and if even more so, someone born today, their life expectancy is through the roof, and their percentages of people who will need long-term care, they will almost certainly need long-term care.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm experiencing the as close as I've ever been to the home care dilemma, because it sounds really good and it's great to protect money, but it's really hard to find caregivers, as you're saying. And the fact patterns I think that work the most is where there's already existing caregivers, and now they're open to being paid in a couple different ways, where there's family members who are going to be the caretakers, where the care part is not an issue, community Medicaid mm-hmm. is great. Where the money is the issue, now we're going to be in trouble, because if we don't have a caregiver and we don't have enough money to throw at extra people. On the way here, I passed a Burger King, and in the window it said $15.50 an hour for a closer, $15.50. Would you rather do that or be a caregiver for someone who's incontinent? I don't know, right? And get paid less than that. And that's the dilemma. It's really hard to find labor. I saw a commercial 2 weeks ago for there's a push to raise the caregiver, the Medicaid payment for caregivers to a better wage. I mean, yeah, I think that would help a lot if it's a job that people could support their family on, as opposed to just a job that's, you know, minimum wage, essentially.
Right, right. It's and we can have, you know, we do have some assistance there we can provide through the firm. We don't provide caregivers, but we do have a care manager on staff who can be helpful in pointing you to the right solutions for caregiver. Could be looking for someone through an agency, looking for some private. We have some connections with private caregivers. Personally, you know, we all have some connections there that can be helpful. They're not always available, but sometimes they can be. But as David, the great beauty of the home care program through Medicaid in New York is, if you have your own set of family members and caregivers, and many people are relying on family members and friends to do the care, they can actually continue to do the care and actually be paid, because many of these people have given up part-time jobs or even full-time employment in exchange for caring for mom, but they're not receiving any compensation. Now they can through this program.
Yeah, and it's not about making a buck on grandpa.
It's about fairness.
Yeah, and I'm not going to work. I'm leaving, you know, I'm working a limited schedule so that I can caretake for
they
my loved
are.
One.
And saying, God, I couldn't get paid for taking care of my dad. Well, no, but dad's not writing the check. The check is coming from the county Medicaid system. And you're working, believe me, and you should be compensated for your time, especially if you've given up other, you know, gainful employment to do this wonderful thing for your friend or your family member. It's really about fairness, I think. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah.
And you wonder why family members get burned out, because they gave up a job that they're making money at. Yep. Now they're taking care of someone, not making any money at all.
They got their own
and,
kids.
And you can't see the light at the end of the tunnel. It's got to be just awful.
I had a situation just a year or two ago. We had three daughters. And let me just say this. In families, the caregiver, the primary caregiver, is usually a daughter. Okay? Rarely a son. Sometimes, but maybe only one out of 30. Okay? Is the primary caregiver for mom or dad. There were three daughters here taking care of mom. These of them were essentially doing an eight-hour shift because she needed 24/7. They all have their own husbands and families. They got kids to get off to school. They got lunches to pack. You know, the usual things that a parent does when you're raising kids. And then on top of that, each of them spending like 8 hours a day times seven, 56 hours a week, close to taking care of dad or mom. And in a year or so, year and a half, in my experience, just watching people, they begin to suffer significant concerns about burnout. And so if you're in that situation, for heaven's sakes, this is the time to come. Yeah, you can do it for another 6 months, maybe another year. But at some point, you may not be able to do it. Or what's more likely to happen is dad's going to get worse, and you're not going to be able to do it, even though you're willing to put in the time. Because as people become increasingly immobile at the point where they can no longer walk, they have serious problems keeping someone at home. So it's all about planning, being aware of things, and asking for help before you are in a crisis situation like we experience probably every week.
Every day,
yeah,
unfortunately. And you know, we don't fix things. You know, we make things better. A lot of times everyone's dealing with an array of you know, which is the least awful decision, Harry, right? That's what it is. It's, you know, we're in this situation.
No, I won't go there. Sounds like what a lot of people do when they go to vote. What is the least awful decision?
Exactly.
I'm sorry.
You're right.
I couldn't
you're spot
reason
on.
Ben is laughing.
You're spot on. Well,
yep.
But you got to vote for someone. You got to pick an option.
Well, you better vote for someone.
We can't. You can't put your head in the sand because you just don't want to deal with, you know,
correct,
what are we going to do with Dad?
Mm-hmm.
We have to address this at some point. And there, none of them are good options because you're dealing with it to begin with, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you do have options. People out there do not believe they have options. They think they have to private pay $105,000 for 7 months. $100,000, excuse me. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Just because they were told that, right? They weren't told they had options. They meet with me or you or Jay Murray, and they know immediately, well, I guess my husband's qualified on Friday.
Right. There they are.
That's how it's going to be.
For heaven's sakes, do not consult the staff at any long-term care facility about Medicaid, what to do with your money if your family member is there. I don't think that's the place to go for advice or guidance. As we said, you know, they're a business. They're in business to make a profit. And they're not in business to guide you through the process and try to make it the least economically painful, for you and your family.
Yeah, and it may just be, you know, they didn't mean it, or it's just someone trying to be helpful, or your neighbor says, well, this is what happened in my fact pattern. Yeah, they're just amateurs, and I mean that in the nicest way. They're not educated in this. This is not what they do 24/7. They're not, you know, us.
They're not qualified to give you advice. They're not qualified anymore. There are lots of non-lawyer Medicaid consultants out and about in the Capitol, not just here, all over the place. I had a client actually in Long Island who went through a nonprofit organization through a church-related group that was doing Medicaid applications for this woman in Long Island. They completely bollocked the whole thing up. And it was, and then they came to us and we got it straightened out. But it took a lot more time. And again, they spent a lot more money than they needed to because they just didn't get good advice about how to go about it.
Absolutely. You could avoid all this crisis stuff by doing a trust, or it's just good to kick the tires and know your options. But the most important document, Harry, is obviously the power of attorney. And that was critical in my next fact pattern.
Yes, well.
No, well, I'll say it right now, but I was proud of myself. I thought it was very dramatic. So this is a client where, again, same fact pattern as before, the two daughters came in. They're able to move everything around between the 21st of March and the 31st of March because they had a power of attorney for their mother that allowed them to do gifting as well as to just move money around to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
The idea was we needed mom to be below $16,800, and there had been some previous gifting that had been done. So these girls had to ungift, and then, you know, they paid us. They looked around the house. They made some necessary cosmetic changes just to get some money spent.
Sure.
Because they're going to list this house for sale. Down the road, when we do sell the house, and it might be a couple months for them, mm-hmm, they're going to get a bunch of money. Now, they is mom. Mom is going to get $200,000. Well, that's a lot more than $16,800. So what we're going to do is a promissory note and a gift plan. We can't do either of those things without a power of attorney. You cannot do the gifting part without a power of attorney that allows gifting.
Allows you to make gifts.
So thankfully, they went to an estate planning firm to do the estate planning, mm-hmm, and they have a power of attorney that allows gifting because when they went there a couple years ago, mom is elderly. So the attorney thought enough to make sure there's gifting, thankfully.
Mm-hmm.
If they had not had that provision, I would be going up to Essex County. It's beautiful this time of year, Harry. Essex County.
Oh, yeah.
You think it's cold here, huh?
Lake Placid's up. Isn't that?
Yeah.
Lake Placid's up in Essex County. I used to go up there when I was a kid.
But I'd have to run up there to get a new power of attorney signed and cross my fingers it was a good day. It was a good day for mom. Because if it's not, and I don't think she has the capacity, I'm not just going to sign something See you tomorrow.
You'd have to do a guardianship proceeding, right?
Or a guardianship.
Some type of a guardianship proceeding or run up there. I don't know. It depends what condition her, you know, her condition is in and whether she can act independently. I'm sorry.
What condition her condition
Kenny is. Rogers in the first edition.
Yeah.
Yes.
I reckon
very nice.
His mind is on the LPs.
Yes, I understand that.
You take me out of the office for 10 weeks.
He was just thinking about having to go to Essex County where it's about 10 degrees.
Yeah.
And that's cold.
Yeah. And we would have done it. Actually, this is no joke. Yesterday, I left the house at around 6:30 and I went to Yorktown. That's Westchester County.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I went to Yorktown Rehab and Nursing and met with a client. She's going to, unfortunately, likely stay there, but we had to move some things around and crossing our fingers, she may go home. There's a loan and gift, et cetera, et cetera. But, we'll kind of go everywhere for it, but if she had a good power of attorney, her son could have just come into our office and done all of it, which mm-hmm. is the point of having a good,
right.
valid power of attorney. And people, you know, they kind of shrink up when they hear gifting. Well, I don't know about that. I don't want anyone to do anything like that, but it's really important. It's unfortunate that New York State uses the word gift, because when you hear gift, you think a gift.
It's a transfer power, and a transfer like this is legally a gift. Okay,
no.
But it's not a gift in the sense that we think of giving gifts. All right, it's and you have to understand the fundamental premise of any transfer in a power of attorney. It must be in the best interests of the person who's giving the power. And so if I'm simply taking my mother's money and moving it into my checking account, that is not necessary. That is not presumptively in her best interest. All right? If I'm moving it into a trust or I'm moving it somewhere where we're going to be able to qualify her for Medicaid in 6 months instead of 12 months, all right, there's a potential $60,000, $70,000, $80,000 savings there that most people would agree is in her best interest to do. People don't routinely voluntarily overpay their taxes. All right, taxes are due in about 2 weeks, right?
Right.
Better start doing my return. I got all the stuff down in North Carolina, but it's the same thing. We don't necessarily want to pay a nursing home when there are other avenues of reimbursement available to us. It just people don't do that.
If you're sitting at home and you say, well, I already have that, I checked that box, I have a power of attorney, go take a look at it. And chances are that if Harry or Jamie or I didn't do it and another attorney did it, chances are there may not be some of these gifting powers. And we don't just, it's not just check a box. In our document, even when there was a gifting rider, now it's provisions that are part of the power of attorney. But one of the provisions in there, one of the quote-unquote modifications, Harry, says that things that are in my best interest include...
Include these things.
Exactly. Include specifically planning for my long-term care needs or my pharmaceutical needs or my health care needs.
Or saving taxes or those things that would normally... Exactly. And just forget, it's only a year. Last June, the state legislature, the new... improved power of attorney form only went into effect last June, I believe.
June 13th.
And that was...
They changed the form. They shortened it. They got rid of the gifting rider.
If your power of attorney is 10 or 15 years old, you need a new one.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. It's still... Listen, the old one you have is still legally valid, but it's going to create delay and questions about, you know, 15 years ago... The power of attorney form that we used, you know, when you go to the branch manager at your favorite bank, you know, 15 years ago, he was in junior high school, okay? Now he's a branch manager who's like 32 years old, and but you don't know from 15 years ago. He's playing basketball, or she was, whatever.
Harry, some people have powers of attorney who are older than the bank tellers they're handing it to, and truthfully.
You're correct.
Yeah. And, you know, with... The powers you're giving, or if you're not sure if you have the right power of attorney, obviously bring it in. We're happy to take a look at it. You could literally drop it, and if it makes too light of a sound, you don't have the right one, because it's 12, 13.
If it's three pages long,
yeah,
you need no one.
If it kind of falls like a leaf, that power of attorney should be changed. If it sinks like a stone, you have a chance.
Like a Rolling Stone.
But the modification, so you always know the attorneys, even if someone gives me a power of attorney from downstate and I've never heard of the attorney or the firm, I know just by looking at it whether they practice in our area specifically or not. Right. Because that modification section that we have is about 3 pages long.
Yes.
We get into everything from, can this person self-gift or not? Mm-hmm. Could they gift to minors? Could they put more things in my trust? Could they create a trust? Could they amend the trust? What about a pooled income trust for our home care needs? All of those provisions, we say these are all examples of gifts that are allowed. And you could mm-hmm. say, well, you know what? I actually don't want gifting to minors, and you could not initial that.
You can take it out.
Whatever you want. But because those extra provisions are there, I don't need to get into a fight with the bank as to why my client is moving money from mom's account to an account with the other kids' names on it. We got to get it out of her name for Medicaid purposes. I don't need to explain this anymore mm-hmm. to the bank because it's already deemed to be in her best interests.
Exactly. It's exactly the case. And so these are critically important documents. A complete power of attorney is probably the least expensive legal document that you can do. But yeah. You can always tell a lawyer who doesn't do practice in the area. Invariably, they don't have a gifting rider. They don't have a modification section that incorporates
yeah.
a lot of the stuff that used to be in the gifting rider. And they just don't do it. It allows routine things, but it doesn't allow the kind of planning that you need when push comes to shove. And so there you have it.
Harry, you've been back in New York for less than 24 hours.
Yes.
Are you going to stay here a little bit or what?
I am here for the duration, yes. Yeah. I'm not going anywhere.
No, hold on. I have till, witnesses on this. I'm just going to write this down as well. You're here till.
Did you record that?
It is recorded.
You should have.
Yeah.
Oh, we have it recorded here.
We'll make it. It's going to be a podcast then.
We'll
are you kidding me?
I was going to say, he's been here less than 24 hours and you already ticked him off with the stuff that you told him. So
we're here till October? We got six months
of
hair.
I think so, yeah. I don't think we have anything planned over the summer. I like it here. I love it here in the summer. Spring, summer. Best time to be in the capital district.
It's good to have you back, Harry.
Talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. For more information on their services, please visit herzoglaw.com. If you'd like to speak with one of their attorneys, please contact the Albany office at 518-465-7581, the Saratoga office at 518-581-8131, or their Kingston office at 845-338-6405.